Whoa, baby. Cold beer with my man, Tyler. Been a long time since you've been on the podcast. I think it was back in October. You were with the smart one, SEC Mike. So now you're with the dumb one in the off season. This is when Mike likes to push the content out. But brother, how have you been, man?
Good, brother. Just been busy. Doing a little work, doing a little podcasting, and being a dad, chasing kids around the baseball field, those kind of things.
Yeah, I know. My wife, sometimes she gets on to me if I'm, like, annoying, and she says, don't you have, like, some podcast stuff to do, you know? Yeah. So she's always pushing the content as well. But brother, it's been a while, and for the listeners, this is probably one of the – like, if you were looking at resumes – this is the one like you would pick out and you say, oh my God, who is this cat? But for those that maybe not familiar with your work, can you tell them a little bit about how you got to a conversation with Cousin Shane in February?
Wow. Been around, coached for a long time, coached for 20 years. I guess the Cliff Notes version, coached for 20 years. I was a high school coach at one period, 100 years ago in Mobile, Alabama. Mm-hmm. Born and raised in the state of Alabama, moved all around. And then towards the latter part of my career, when recruiting started, I was always like the recruiting coordinator as the receivers coach. And when staffs kind of blew up and we made the move, my first time really getting into recruiting or running recruiting for what we know it as now was at Ole Miss with Freeze. I was the receivers coach with him at Arkansas State, came with him to Ole Miss. And then kind of that's when the kind of recruiting stuff started, and then got a call of a blue. About a year later, 13, 14 months later, from a guy named Nick Saban to come to Alabama to run recruiting there. That's a call you take and a job you take. And so went there, wanted to get back on the field and coach. I'd kind of – burnout's not the right word. It's just I wanted to coach. That was a goal of mine. I wanted to be a head coach. And so I went back on the field at South Alabama to coach receivers again with Joey Jones down at South. And then one of my best friends in the whole planet, Matt Luke, gets the job at Ole Miss. And then – I guess when he got the permanent job at Ole Miss, I went back with him to run recruiting there and kind of do the recruiting back the way we were doing it before. And then after that, brother, somebody peed in the end zone, gets us all fired. I started my own – a pandemic happens. I start my own business. Shout out to Ross Bjork for the three-year contract before he walked out the door. Best job in the world as a fired football coach. And then started my own business and been doing that ever since. It's kind of taken off and with QuickU. And I really do the same thing I've always done. I just do it for a bunch of schools instead of one school now. So that's kind of what we do for a business. And the colleges are my clients. And I got everybody from LSU. I'm trying to think, LSU to Butler Community College and everybody in between. You know, we got all conferences, and so we got every conference in the from North Carolina to Central Florida to whoever, right? So we got them all.
Recruiting has always been one of my favorite parts, and you know, even when I was in high school, I remember the letters coming in, the coaches coming in, not to see me, asking me where somebody else is, you know, type situations. But you know, that's something you have had your fingers in your entire life. And you know, I think about some of the stops that you've made along the way to get here, and I can't let you get off the show without asking about that Ole Miss year with and I mess his name up every time I say it, but Robert Kimchi. Yeah, and Tunsil and Treadwell and those guys. What was it like? I mean, Ole Miss was – you got to remember – I think the thing is, Ole Miss, a lot of people think about Lane Kiffin now and the recruiting and the NIL and the transfer portal. There was a long time Ole Miss had a tough time, extremely tough time recruiting down there to Oxford. And then all of a sudden, the magical recruiting class popped up. And you were kind of behind the scenes there. So can you walk me through when you took that job, like getting Ole Miss on the map?
Yeah, so first thing is we had an amazing staff. I mean, just a really, 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 really good staff there that was, you know, and Coach Freeze still does, and you can look at – you can say what you want to say if you're an Auburn fan or you're not an Auburn fan. He's always been a great recruiter. Mm-hmm. He's always going to be a great recruiter. He's awesome in the living room. He's an awesome relationship guy, and he works at it. And so when you have a head coach, you know, I always said this, you look at teams that are very successful in recruiting, it starts at the top. Mm-hmm. And it's an emphasis that the head coach puts on, and he does it. And he doesn't just say, hey, you guys go recruit. He recruits. And so when you look at places that recruit an elite level, it starts at the top. And so obviously it started with Freeze all the way down, and we just had a really good staff, and we communicated. I think, you know, I was telling a staff earlier today, I think communication is the key amongst the staff. You know, we've gotten to this world to where recruiting has become so positional. Mm-hmm. You know, the O-line coach is worried about the O-line players only, right? And yeah, you know, safeties coach is worried about safeties. and when everybody in the building understands how, like, so when the D-line coach understands when the running back walks through the door, how important he is to your program, because if that running back goes and scores 14 touchdowns this year, mm-hmm. guess what? The D-line coach is going to be able to keep his job too.
Yeah.
So, and that's what it's about, right? I mean, that's the whole point, is you're trying to keep your job. But anyway, long story short, is it started at the top, and you know, the brand, we had a lot of brand rebuilding to do at that point, at that time. And we spent really a year to do it. A lot of the things, a lot of those guys, the strategies were put in place when we first got there for the 13 class, even though we were finishing up the 12 class. You know, like example, Laquan Treadwell was number two. I think it was Robert Foster and Laquan Treadwell were the top two guys that year. Ended up being able to go be with Robert the next year at Alabama. But like Laquan Treadwell, we had him identified as the top wide receiver on our board. Mm-hmm. Well, what did we do? And we got the job, whatever it was, in December, whenever it was. Well, in April, after signing day, so after the official signing day, late, we signed Anthony Sandifer from Creep Monet, who was Laquan Treadwell's best friend that was a year older.
Yeah.
So we did things. We had some extra. We did some things to put ourselves in good position, you know, moving forward. With those things. So Robert Condici was the number one player in America. Mm-hmm. Well, Houston Nutt had already signed his brother. His brother, Denzel, was already on the team. So there were a lot of things in place there to get us. You know, Tony Connor, who got hurt, or he was a first-round safety as well, but he got hurt in his career. But Tony Connor was 30 miles down the road,
yeah,
you know, in Batesville. So there's a lot of things that we had, a lot of relationships and a lot of things in place. Chris Kiffin started recruiting Larry McTunsil the day he got the job. So, you know, there was so many things that went on there that, you know, behind the scenes, that we got very fortunate mm-hmm. to be in the position to recruit some of those guys, but the whole staff worked their tails off to get that. And, you know, we cast a wide net, you know, and kind of, that was probably the first place. I had never been a offer a bunch of people kind of
yeah.
person, but we did. We offered a ton of people because of our brand, and try to get our brand out there and a name out there, to make people on the internet tweet, hey, this guy got an offer by Ole Miss. This guy got an offer by Ole Miss. This, you know, so there was a lot of strategy behind to get the brand out there, but we had a great staff of guys that were elite relationship builders and worked their ass off.
Yeah, we still talk about that class. You know, I ain't gonna lie. And then you go over to Bama and I guess you just keep it rolling there. You're winning awards with recruiting. How many Chargers did you buy down there in Tuscaloosa?
There was no, you know, contrary to popular belief, you know, NIL started what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know all this stuff about players getting paid and getting things before NIL. I don't know where people come up with that stuff. That's mm-hmm. that's like, I don't know. That's the craziest stuff I've ever heard in my life, because NIL came around in like what, 2-3 years ago.
Got it.
And, you know, look, when Cam Newton, when he went to Auburn, you know, there's all these rumors. He got this, he got that, he got this. He went to Auburn and he saw them roll Toomer's Corner.
Yeah.
He saw the Eagle pregame flying over the field, and he's like, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
On that note, I mean, you know, because they built a brand. Saban built an amazing brand. Everybody wanted – you were there 13 and 14, right? Mm-hmm. And honestly, that 13, we were talking about this before the show. I feel like – when it's all said and done and the dust settles, they may make a movie about this year, because the ups and downs. I mean, there was times that Alabama looked absolutely unstoppable, but then you pair it with an Iron Bowl and a terrible ending to a season. I always wonder if that Bama team would have beat Auburn, which they probably should have, would they would they be in the national championship? Would they have won the national championship?
Yeah, that year? It wasn't in my, and I try to keep a, you know, I try to be very, I'm a realist.
Yeah.
13 was the best football team I've ever been a part of. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even particularly close. We were the best team in the country that year. It wasn't even particularly close. Now the next year, 14, we go to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. We had no business being in the playoff.
Yeah.
That was the first ever 4-team college football playoff. The next year we went and lost to Ohio State. We had no business being there.
Right.
We overachieved that year. We underachieved the year, but it was just one game. So mm-hmm. if the 4-team playoff would have been in place the year before, we probably would have won it.
Yeah.
We didn't have no business winning. And be honest with you, and I tell people this all the time, and it makes a lot of people mad when I tell them this. The best team in the country in 2014 did not make the playoff. The best team in the country was TCU that year. Mm. And TCU got left out. They lost to Baylor. It was like one of those 62-59, 59-57, some kind of really high-scoring game. They lost one game all year.
Yeah.
They were the best team in the country that year in 2014. And they went to the Peach Bowl, Access Bowl, and played Ole Miss actually that year and beat the brakes off of them in the Peach Bowl. So they were the best team in the country that year. None of the four teams, they were left out, and they were the best team.
Now, 2014, who had the best coaching staff in the world?
We had some good ones. We had some good ones there. Yeah, for sure.
Kirby, Mario, Billy Napier was down there. Who else am I missing? You, Lane Kiffin. Yeah.
So Lane was the offensive coordinator. Kirby was defensive coordinator. Billy Napier, Mario Cristobal. Bobby Williams was the tight ends coach. He had been the head coach at Michigan State. Burton Burns, running backs coach. I love Burton. Burton's coached, I don't know, 2-3 Heisman Trophy winners. And then we had Lance Thompson, and Lance is a legend. He's been everywhere. He's a phenomenal coach, phenomenal recruiter. We had Bo Davis, who's now LSU. We had Bo Davis. And before that, the year before that, we had Chris Rumpf, who's now at Clemson. So we had D-line coaches. Tosh Lupoy was on that staff. Kevin Steele was on that staff.
Oh, yeah.
And a guy named Nick Saban, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, is that, you know, everybody always talks about the Knicks dynasty, and is that – it just seems like it's tough. It's harder and harder to build coaching staffs like we saw early 2000s and even the 90s and 80s. You see a lot of these coaches. We got Josh Heupel up here in Tennessee trying to keep that continuity. You see Coach Venables. He tried. Now he's searching for new coordinators. Let me ask you. A lot of these coaches, you're big in recruiting. I always hear that they don't like college as much because of that recruiting side. Do you feel like the NFL has poached a lot of these good coaches, or am I just overreacting?
No, I mean, if they can get it, if you will ask 100 coaches, mm-hmm. and if you offer them the same amount of pay that they're making to go do the same job they're doing right now. So if you said you go to school X, doesn't matter what school. It can be Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You say you're the wide receivers coach and you're making $650,000 a year. You can go to the Atlanta Falcons and make $650,000 a year and be the receivers coach. 100 out of 100 are going to take the NFL job.
Yeah.
Okay. So it depends on the opportunity right now. If it's a step down or less money, okay, that's different. But if it's equal, they're going.
Yeah.
And it's not really the recruiting part as far as recruiting has always been recruiting. It's the immediate eligibility, and people mm-hmm. keep saying the portal, and I get what they're saying, but it's not, the portal's not the problem, because the portal was around before the immediate eligibility was around. So it's the immediate eligibility that's caused all the issues. I told somebody yesterday, and it makes people mad. I don't care. That's the other thing, is I don't care. All of the issues that we have in college football right now, mm-hmm. all of them. So we all agree it's a mess right now, right?
Right.
99.999% of all the problems in college football are caused because of immediate eligibility. All they would have to do, and I get they're getting sued and all that stuff, and and that's the problem, is they set themselves up for failure. This could have been fixed a long time ago, but they set themselves up for failure because once they allowed immediate eligibility, and that's caused inflation, that's caused the money to go get out of hand, that's caused that now, because the money, it's just a tear down effect, right?
Yeah.
Because give me an example of somebody, let's say, all right, Quinshon Judkins. Okay. Yeah. I used him, I think, for example, we were talking about this on our show yesterday, the day before yesterday, whenever it was. So maybe it was last night. I don't remember. But whatever money, let's say he got $750 to go to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Let's just say if that was the number, it's around there. Okay. What if he, how much would Ohio State pay him if he had to sit out a year?
How much would they have?
How much would they have paid him to leave Ole Miss to come sit and not play?
A they fraction of that.
All right. So, but what happens is now he goes in the market. You have, like in the NFL, we have market resets, right? So when Patrick Mahomes is a free agent, he got his $450 million contract, they reset the market. And then all these other, that other group with Allen, Tua, and all that group, Jalen Hurts, all that, that age group, they got their $50 million. So now that's mm-hmm. market's been reset there. Well, guess what? What do you think Patrick Mahomes could get right now? You know, he's like the 10th highest paid quarterback. What could he get right now in the open market?
Yeah.
So if he was a free agent every year, he would just continue to reset the market. And so now the money's gotten so much, we got to figure out how to pay for this now. Mm-hmm. And so that it's all the issues go back to immediate eligibility. And so, you know, it's
is that how you fix it then? You just make them sit again?
Well, you can't fix it now because of all the precedents inside because they'll just go to court. The only way to fix it at this point is to break off and then start your – and you have to collective bargain and run it like – you know, I've said for – I think I could have this thing fixed over a lunch meeting. Now, we'd have to break off. We'd have to collective bargain with the players, okay? Mm-hmm. There's a model. It's called the National Football League.
Yeah.
And so break off. And then for me – you would be locked into the school that you're at until you graduate, because this is another thing that people don't want. You know, people don't like to talk about the real issues. They just want to talk about the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. These kids aren't graduating.
Yeah. No, it's okay? good.
They're not graduating. So if you want to be a free agent and you want to leave, I think you should graduate. If you want to graduate in 3 years, you can go be a free, you have five to play five. If you graduate in 3 years, go be a free agent for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. That should be your free agent card. Before that, you should be a restricted free agent and have to sit out a year. And it would fix everything.
Yeah, we talked to I had Rusty on last week, and we talked about this. There's going to be some sad stories in 3 or 4 years when these kids that are used to making $100,000 a year have to settle down for a $40,000 a year job or pay back taxes that they didn't pay during the time that they were at college. So, yeah, I feel like there is a dark side that will get exposed sooner than later. So
but people don't like talking about it. You know what I mean? The fans don't want to hear it. You know, they just want to hear the good stuff. They want to win. They don't want to hear, you know, and that's the problem from my side is, you know, I care about the player.
Right.
You know, I'm not in the business. I know that again, I'm not in the business to care about the fan. I'm not in the business to care about the player. And so, you know, it's when they're not getting their education. And just like you said, you got guys that are getting paid all this money. Well, they're not even graduating. So what job are they going to get when they can't?
Yeah.
When they can't, you know, they don't graduate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just the fans, like, it's like wrestling, you know, you don't care that he's taking steroids. You just want him to get out there and do a signature move. So, Mike, Tyler, I wanted to ask you too, talking about a couple of those teams. When you look at the landscape of college football now, and one of the things that you and Mike talked about the last time you were on was just the overall lack of development for some of these players, you know, will it ever go back to development? I mean, will we start seeing fifth-year seniors again at some point, or do you think we're just on a fast ride we can't get off of?
Well, so here's the other thing. So it goes back to roster building, right? And so the rules, we talked about this a few weeks ago, the rules have changed so much so fast. And so now you were in this space to where the people who were building their teams out of the portal were the ones that were being successful, right? Mm-hmm. And then the high school player had been lost and forgotten, right? For the most part, obviously not the big ones, but for the most part. Well, now rev shares come in.
Yeah.
Okay. So when rev shares come in, I don't know if I obviously keep up with it for a living, but if you look at the talent level of the portal today compared to a year ago, and you look what was in the portal in December and January compared to a year ago, it's night and day. The talent level is way down. So teams that have been on the build it out of the portal strategy are going to have less talent.
Yeah.
And what they had a year ago, right? So, like, if you look at the quarterbacks, I mean, you can just look at the quarterbacks, period. I mean, a year ago, you had did you think about the guys you had in the portal compared to this year? You had Cam Ward, you had Dylan Gabriels, you had all these guys. Well, this year, and two of them came in the SEC, but you know, you really had you had three what I call program changers. That's it. There were three. And one was late. You got Carson Beck, who's really good. He's going to be an NFL draft pick. You got, you know, I think Jackson Arnold going to Auburn is going to be a big deal for Auburn. I think he's a really good fit for that system. I think he's an elitely talented young man. And I think it was just he was playing with a bunch of other young guys. You know, I think he was you don't have time to grow anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have time to develop. People forget the guy was a freshman. You know, and that was his first game experience. I think he's going to be better. I think he'll do really good in that system. And then the one that nobody's talking about, I'm just telling you here, right? What we have, this is February the 21st. Yeah. Mateer at Oklahoma, I'm just telling you. The guy can play. The guy can play. And he's the real deal. And the guy can play. So this league is going to be full of quarterbacks next year. I mean, it's going to be a huge – I mean, everybody's got a quarterback. So – you got Diego Pavia coming back for year 64, right? So it's like, you know, it's a full league, you know. I love Nuss, you know, and you're looking at how much is Sellers and Lagway going to improve.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to see growth there. You're going to see a Nico after second year, you know, being a starter, third year total in the system. I mean, you got a lot, and you got Austin Simmons at Ole Miss, who is an elite arm talent guy. He needs reps, but he is extremely talented. You got Arch at Texas. I mean, we can go on. You got Marcel Reed's finally going to have an offense built around him instead of trying to be the, you know, there's a lot of really good players in the league and really good quarterbacks, but those three, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and a year ago you had a ton, and like Ole Miss last year, they went and got Princely from Florida as a pass rush specialist. And they got Walter Nolan, who was to me one of, if not the best interior defensive lineman in the country. Those guys aren't in the portal this year.
There's not a Walter Nolan
in the portal this year. There's not a Princely in the portal this year. You know, so it's, you know, it's teams that have now, why is that? Because of rev share.
Yeah.
Now these teams that didn't have the money to maintain their roster now have an influx of cash and they're able to maintain their roster. These kids aren't going anywhere because they're getting paid at the place they're already at.
Who's your favorite receiver room right now in the SEC? And why is it not Tennessee?
probably too early for me to tell. You know, I want to see how it all gets put together. It's so different to me. It's like, I know traditionally this time of year, you're supposed to be talking about, hey, this hell, we don't know if it's going to be in the damn. I mean, what's going to happen in the April portal window? Yeah. I kind of reserve all the roster looks and, you know, I've peaked.
Yeah.
But I kind of reserve all my judgments till summertime.
Well, let me on the receiver room, because when you go back to Ole Miss, I mean, I would argue, let's say 2018, you went back to Ole Miss, and that room was absolutely loaded. Has there been a better receiving room than A.J. Brown, Knox, D.K. Metcalf, Elijah? What's his name? What's the tall, lanky kid? There was another one up there.
That Marcus Lodge.
Yeah, Lodge. Yeah. Has there ever been a wide receiver room as good as that one in the SEC?
Well, that room was kind of like, if you look at it today, you know, and if we had everybody in their prime, I think that would be the case. You know, AJ was in his prime. AJ was doing his thing. We only had DK for like four or five games that year because he hurt his neck. So we didn't have DK much. He missed most of the season with his neck issue. And then AJ had some issues. AJ was banged up that year. And we had Elijah was a baby. You know, Elijah wasn't Elijah yet. I mean, he was coming, but he really didn't reach until probably the next year, 19. He's when he started kind of being the guy. And DeMarcus was legit. So if we had everybody in their prime, yes. I think we had a year of influx with them. And then, you know, Dawson Knox, I mean, it was one of those deals. All the Ole Miss fans give Coach Longo grief because he didn't catch enough balls. I'm like, well, just remember every time that he gets the ball, that means we didn't throw it to AJ, DK, Elijah. I mean, there was a lot of options, right? So, but, you know, he was he was unbelievable. Great. I mean, he's obviously still getting paid to play, but he was awesome. I mean, he's a walk-on, by the way. He was a quarterback out of high school.
Last question I got for you. And again, I really appreciate you taking the time and, yeah, to hang out with me this early. That's maybe the earliest beer I've had in a while, but,
I was about to say, I was like, we're trying to sell it. We're trying to sell it at 5 o'clock somewhere. Is that what we're doing? They think we take this thing at 5 o'clock.
That's the beauty of working at home, man, is you don't have to drive anywhere, but
I like it.
You're in Oxford. So I got to ask, 3 years from now, Lane Kiffin is where?
I think he's here.
You think he's there?
Yeah, I think the only if you told me he wasn't here, I would tell you it was the NFL.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, I think I really give a credit to Keith Carter and the administration. When Glenn Boyce became the president, you know, he's been very involved in athletics. They're not going to get outbid.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's something that would have happened in the past. Mm-hmm. But since Keith Carter's got there, and you know, and Ross, when Ross was here, Ross had kind of opened up the checkbook a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And so they'd been very pre-Ross Bjork, they had not really spent in athletics.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Keith obviously worked under Ross and then got the job, and he's an alum. You know, he played basketball here, and then when Glenn Boyce, he's been 100% supportive behind it, and they have the difference in what is going on even with Lane. Like, even when Glenn Boyce, he kind of took it to a whole nother level, the spending, you know. Yeah. Look, and it's, you don't just win just because you win. You win, right, because you have the resources to win. I mean, it's no secret. I mean, who won the national championship this year?
Ohio State.
You think they got resources?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Who won the year before that?
Michigan.
You think they got resources?
Yeah.
All right, when was the last time Purdue won it?
Have they ever? I don't know.
I mean, like, it takes resources. Like, you have to be committed at that level to win it.
Do you think – I told you that's the last question. I lied. Oh, but do you think, speaking of resources, when you see an SEC team not win a natty in 2 years, there has to be some uncomfortable coaches out there. There has to be some uncomfortable boosters out there, you know, because they are donating money, and they've always been used to getting those results. I don't want to say the SEC is getting weaker, but is it going to be tougher for this league to produce a national championship team because of these Oregons that got infinite money, Ohio State that apparently has infinite money?
Well, it depends on how long this model lasts.
Yeah.
Right. So we're out of that model. So the reason that it's been the way it's been is because of immediate eligibility and collectives. Okay, so your rev share was your collective. Like, the schools didn't pay them. There wasn't a quote-unquote salary cap. So right now you're getting capped with rev share. Mm-hmm. And Deloitte's going to come in and be a third-party collective. So do I think that people, the days of people coming in and saying, hey, we're still going to raise $10, $20 million on top of our rev share, those are gone, okay? Yeah. Because if it's enforced, I mean, the way the rules are today, February 21st, if it's enforced, but if they go down, if this model that they're in right now sticks, how long is it going to stick? I don't think very long. This House versus the NCAA is going to go through in April, and there's going to be 874 lawsuits waiting for the judge to hit the gavel, and then they're going to submit their lawsuit, right? So how long does this last? If the rev share model lasts, and let's say it, and let's just call it, if it's 20.5 million and we're saying 75%, you know, you're looking at 16 to 16.5 million going to the football.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be able to build your depth back up. The problem with the SEC in the last few years is depth is what wins.
Yeah.
If you want to win championships, you have to have depth. Well, the SEC has been losing their depth to Oregon's, to Utah's, these guys that would be playing on your team. There may be twos, and they may be taking 30 snaps a game, but they're making, you know, maybe they were making 150 mm-hmm. at your place. Well, I'm just using an example. Oregon pays your guy, that same guy calls and says, hey, I'll give you 500 to come start for me. And so you're losing all your depth. And that's why, in my opinion, why the SEC, and again, it's still a great league, it's still all that, right?
Yeah.
But you win championships because of depth. And that's always been the case.
Right.
But now we've added playoffs to it. So now you're playing more games, so you need more depth. Rev share is going to allow teams to pay their depth to keep them. Mm-hmm. And so I think you'll see a flip back to where the SEC is winning them again. Mm-hmm. but it may take a year or two to get. I mean, not saying they won't win it this year, but I'm just saying before right. you see the runs that you saw, if this rev share model stays mm-hmm. for however long it stays, you will see that come back.
Hey, well, Tyler, I appreciate you taking time hanging out with us. Can you tell the audience where they can find your content? I mean, honestly, you jump on TikTok, you're going to find Tyler somewhere.
Yeah, I think we get on the For You page is pretty good if you're a football fan. McCready and Siski on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter. And then we do our show, the McCready and Siski podcast. During the offseason, we're doing it twice a week. During the season, we do it 3 days a week. But we're doing it Mondays and Thursdays at 2 p.m. Central on the MPW Digital YouTube channel.
Hey, man. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
You bet, brother. Thank you.